This is a Squiz podcast. We're your shortcut to being informed. This week, our podcast is brought to you by BHP. Reducing greenhouse gas emissions in the production of copper is critical. That's why BHP has committed to solar, wind, and battery agreements to help power their copper mine at Olympic Dam in South Australia. It's happening now at BHP. Visit bhp.com/critical to find out more. Weekly Wrap is the week in news and what's coming up. I'm Kate Watson.
And I'm Claire Kimball.
Today we've got Bruce Lehrman and his defamation case. It's back in the headlines in a really big way, so we'll try and make sense of that for you.
That is a really big promise, we know, but we're going to make good on that promise. Also on difficult issues, we're going to cover off where things are up to in Alice Springs and the Israeli airstrike that killed an Aussie aid worker, Zomi Frankum.
Our new Governor-General, of course, and in what's coming up, a big moment for the kids and parents of Australia. And our recommendation game today is all about history. Let's get into it. Most clicked link out of the Squiz Today newsletter this week is finally one we can talk about. We haven't really been able to pull it out for a few weeks now.
It's not a visual one, so that helps.
It's not a visual one for once. Or, I mean, you might want to have a look, but it's a story about Big W carrying a $949 Gucci wallet.
Yeah, so I clicked on that too and then handed it over to Alice and Siobhan to put into the newsletter. Apparently, that's a really great price for a Gucci wallet. I'm not really up on designer labels much.
Yeah.
But that was one reason. The other reason, of course, is why does Big W, as a Woolworths discount department store, have Gucci wallets as the retailer? It wasn't in stores, I hasten to add.
Couldn't walk into Big W and
buy it. There were queues of people trying to buy Gucci wallets in your shopping centre. They have an online platform that's called Market.
The thing about this story is you keep wanting to talk about retail. I feel like you should maybe launch a retail podcast. Because it's always where you go.
I know.
I'll indulge you for one more week.
Thank you. I've been put on notice. After that, you can find me at Claire's Retail Corner.
I like that.
Look, essentially, many of these really big retailers, they have these online sites. They have things on those sites that you can't find in store, and it's called dropship vending. So in this case, it means that Big W doesn't physically have those things for sale or even in their warehouses, and they don't even deal with the shipping of it. What they do is that they have these markets, they host suppliers, and they clip the ticket because they bring the customer.
So it's like an online marketplace.
There
you go. Temple and Webster, apparently Freedom, you tell me. Plenty of retailers do it. Amazon, I guess, is the extreme example.
Amazon is the example. Exactly.
We've all learned something.
I told you.
The biggest news story this week has been the rolling coverage of the reopening of the Bruce Lehrman defamation case against Network 10 and Lisa Wilkinson. I said to you this week, I'm really lost. I don't think I'm alone. I've had a few emails from Squiz listeners this week asking us to give them a recce. It's hard to follow.
Yeah, and I reckon there's probably two reasons for that. You're interested in the case, but you're just lost in all the legal wrangling. There's been a lot of that. Or I reckon you're probably just someone who finds it all a bit much and all a bit yuck.
Yeah, it's the latter for me, I must admit. But I've got my head around it for the greater good.
Okay, well done.
I think it's my job.
It is your job. Yeah. That is why we pay you to come and do this podcast.
It's true.
So, look, and let's start off de-scrambling all of this and just put what's been happening now in context. So, first of all, Bruce Lehrman, the former federal Liberal staffer, he was accused by his colleague Brittany Higgins of raping her in Parliament House in 2019, just putting that sentence together just to start at the scratch. He brought this defamation case against Network 10 and Lisa Wilkinson in her role of the host of the project. That's because 10 aired that really big interview with Brittany Higgins. And that was really the interview that set pretty much everything off. She talked about her alleged rape, the treatment of women in politics, all of it. She didn't name Lehrman. The project didn't ever say his name, but he says that it pretty much identified him. So he's claiming that he was defamed.
That defamation trial ran right up to the end of last year. It was in the news a lot. The judge was going to announce his decision about that trial on Thursday.
say that didn't happen because over Easter, Channel 10 came forward with new evidence, I guess.
Yeah, exactly right. And 10 said that it had those affidavits, that it was from Seven's Spotlight program, a producer for that program. His name is Taylor Auerbach. And 10 wanted to put it into evidence as part of its defence, and that the case would have to be reopened to do that.
In order to do that. I feel like the term sworn affidavits gets thrown around a lot.
Very good point.
But so let's just pause to get people across that. It's a statement from a witness that outlines their version of the facts as it's relevant to a case. As for Auerbach, he's given four affidavits outlining how Seven secured an interview with Lehrman. We keep talking about Channel 7, but we haven't said how they're involved. Let's do that now.
Yeah, so let's tidy that up. Last year, 7 aired an interview with Bruce Lerman. That was mid last year. And all sorts of new stuff came to light. Brittany Higgins' text messages with her former boyfriend from just after the alleged rape in 2019. Also footage from the corridors of Parliament House. It showed the pair in the corridor going into that ministerial office where Higgins alleges that Lerman raped her. Lots of questions about how did Seven get their hands on that stuff?
How did they get all of that information, all of that footage? Stay with us. We're headed to another trial now, which is important to understand in all of this, the criminal one in the ACT that was abandoned in 2022. During that trial, those messages, footage, heaps of other stuff was evidence that the prosecution and defence had access to, the prosecution being the Crown and the defence being Bruce Lerman.
Yeah, exactly right. And it's the sort of stuff that the sides agree to keep under wraps. It's not for public distribution if it's not tendered in court. And in Lerman's criminal trial, it wasn't. So since Seven aired some of that, particularly given it was really essential to support Lerman's argument that he didn't assault Higgins, that's why it created waves when it hit that Seven Spotlight interview.
So the question is whether Lerman gave it to Seven.
Exactly.
That's where we're up to right now. Back to the defamation case, which is the one that's happening as we speak. Last year, Lerman was asked about it in court. He said it wasn't him who leaked it. He said that under oath. Now the guy from Seven, Taylor Auerbach, whose job it was to work with Lerman on that interview, says it absolutely was.
And that's why it's relevant to Channel 10, because they want to demonstrate that Lerman isn't of good character. They want to try and convince the judge, use that as part of an argument why they didn't defame Lerman.
To do that, the case had to be reopened, as you said. We should say that Lerman maintains it wasn't him, that he didn't rape Higgins, just to make sure we've covered that base. The bit that's missing here, Claire, is all the grimy bits and pieces about Auerbach, Bruce Lerman, the accusation that Seven paid for sex workers and cocaine in an attempt to secure that interview with him, all of those salacious details, that's been dominating the news this week.
There's been a really long list of those really grimy bits and pieces. To be clear, Auerbach says that Seven paid for the prostitutes and drugs. Seven says absolutely not the case. And there's also a whole backstory towards why Auerbach might be going after his former employer and his former colleagues. It's a whole other rabbit hole that you can go down. But just to say, Auerbach doesn't work for Seven anymore or that program.
It's interesting to look at the reporting of this, depending on what paper you're reading, you're going to get a different take. Nine papers had a headline this week, "If Only We Could Sue Too, The Creepy Spotlight Saga Is Ruining the Reputation of All Journalists," Spotlight being that Channel 7 program. And The Australian, a News Corp paper, another big media organisation who's not part of this, not Channel 7, they're not Channel 10, has been following this one non-stop. Their podcast, The Front, from Thursday, gives a really good overview of what's been happening in court.
Kate, if all of that wasn't enough,
I think we got there.
Also this week, former Defence Minister Linda Reynolds, she's suing Higgins and her partner David Shiraz for defamation. That's happening over in Perth. That's been in the courts, that's been in mediation. Mediation has broken down. That has to do with what Higgins said about Linda Reynolds in that original Network 10 project interview.
And if you can believe it, we're not done. Bruce Lerman is also back in court in Queensland in June over two counts of rape alleged to have occurred in Toowoomba in October 2021.
It's a lot.
All right, other news, Claire. We'll go international first. Earlier this week, an Israeli airstrike killed aid workers, one of which was Australian woman Zomi Frankem. Benjamin Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, said in a video, and this is the quote, "This happens in wartime. We're thoroughly looking into it. We're in contact with the governments," and he's referring to the foreigners among the dead, "and we'll do everything to ensure it does not happen again."
And when you look across the news commentary, this event and the subsequent response from Netanyahu has many saying that it's a bit of a watershed moment for support for Israel in that war against Hamas. That support is really declining.
Very quickly, 7 aid workers were killed in that attack, all worked for the World Central Kitchen, one being Frankem, as I said, from Australia. The other included 3 British nationals, a Polish national, a Palestinian, and a dual US-Canadian citizen. Anthony Albanese, our Prime Minister, said he'd spoken to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. He said he expressed anger and concern, and he was angry.
Yeah, you can see that certainly in his statements. And then when you look at the other leaders from those countries that you mentioned, Rishi Sunak from the United Kingdom, of course, he said that what's happening in Gaza is increasingly intolerable. The Polish government has said that they've demanded an independent investigation. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau says full accountability is needed. He also added that it's been, and this is his quote, "absolutely unacceptable for aid workers to be killed by the IDF." And then we get to the United States and Joe Biden.
That's the big one. He had a call late in the week with Netanyahu. Reports say he told him that the United States would reassess its policy towards the war in Gaza if it did not take immediate steps to address the what is a disastrous humanitarian situation in Gaza. Immediate being within days.
Yeah, exactly right. And before we leave this one, Kate, you want to mention the Daily podcast?
Yeah, they have a great episode out about the World Central Kitchen, how that aid organization came to be. It's an incredible story, really worth a listen. And this one has a lot of legs, particularly because the founder of World Central Kitchen is a figure in and of himself. He's a celebrity chef, Jose Andres, and he's had a lot to say in criticism of Israel. Claire, back home to Alice Springs. We would have talked about this one last week if we hadn't been on a break. We were on our Easter break. The story certainly hasn't gone away.
Yeah, so just to backtrack a little bit, Wednesday week ago, the Northern Territory Chief Minister, who is Eva Lawler, she declared a state of emergency. She also announced a 2-week-long youth curfew in Alice Springs in the CBD area. That was in reaction to widespread unrest that broke out on Tuesday. Reports were that about 150 people, a lot of kids, were throwing rocks. They were breaking windows. A car was set alight. That was to do with a local dispute in the Indigenous community. The police said that those incidents were related to the death of a teenage boy. He died following a crash in an alleged stolen vehicle.
But it's not about this incident. I mean, this has been a problem in Alice Springs for a really long time now. We know that. These are big steps though. So what it means is that anyone under 18 can't be in the CBD area between 6 p.m. and 6 a.m. unless they have a valid reason. There's a few valid reasons, but they're not particularly extensive. The curfew's in place until this Wednesday. The NT government says they're considering extending that curfew so that it runs until the end of the school holidays.
Yep, and that's off the back of businesses and shops in the area saying that the curfew has had a positive impact for them. They're anxious that once the curfew eases, when we get into next week, that crime would return. Plenty are saying that the curfew is unfair, though.
I was reading a couple of reports from the ABC. They're doing a lot of reporting out of there and lots of differences of opinions about how to manage this one, which is nearly always the case with things like this. One name that's going to come up in the news reporting and has come up a lot in all of this is the mayor of Alice Springs, Matt Patterson Clare. He's called for the federal government to intervene.
Yeah, and he's done that in the past. If you remember what happened last year, of course, there was a lot of conversation around Alice Springs and grog in the community and all the violence at that point in time. He called for a federal intervention at that point. But this time around, he's saying that the federal government should overrule the territory government and step in.
He said the situation's scary, it's dangerous, and the quote is, "What we've shown over the last 14 years is we are too immature as a jurisdiction to run ourselves. Claire, the final story to cover off, of course, is the appointment of Samantha Mostyn, as our new Governor General. She'll start when the current GG, David Hurley, finishes his term at the start of July.
Not the first woman to have that role. Quentin Bryce, of course, was our first female Governor General. She was appointed by the Rudd government back in 2008. When you look down the list of GGs, the thing that stuck out, I think, is there's such a clear difference between the sort of people that Labor appoints compared to the ones who the coalition appoints.
It's a generalisation.
It is.
But Labor tend to like people with a legal background. Mostyn has that. She was a lawyer. She worked in big business, in insurance and telecommunications. She was also a Labor staffer, which I didn't realise, and neither did you.
Yeah, I don't think I'd clock that until this discussion about telco. She was someone who worked for communications ministers, and she also worked in that field as the communications advisor to Paul Keating when he was the Prime Minister.
And just to finish that thought and to round it out, I guess what we're saying is the coalition of preferred military men. David Hurley, as I said, he'll leave the role at the end of June, was our former Chief of Defence. Peter Cosgrove, of course, before him, was the former Chief of Army and Chief of Defence. As for what sort of Governor General Mostyn will be, lots of her supporters say she's done well in business. She's also very focused on tackling inequity.
Yeah, a lot of work on gender inequality. Mm. Craig Foster, he's the former Socceroo. He's also chair of the Australian Republican Movement. He does a lot of work with refugees. He's a big Sam Mostyn fan. Mm. I liked his quote. She would be a wonderful president of an Australian republic.
He's big, as you say, on Australia becoming a republic. So that's where that comes from. Lots of the commentator this week made note of her Republican leanings. She's also just 58. Usually the Governor General is someone older and on the verge of retirement or just retired.
Yeah, so there's a youngster going to Government House. Imagine the parties. I hope they're preparing.
I don't know about that. We'll see. Coming up this week, Claire, starting with Sunday, it's the end of daylight saving.
I'm so here for it.
I'm so here for it.
It's so dark in the mornings. Yeah, so if you live in New South Wales like we do, Victoria, South Australia, Tasmania, the Australian Capital Territory, Norfolk Island, you can set your clocks back an hour, get an extra hour of sleep on Sunday morning.
Well, I wonder if we have any listeners from Norfolk Island. If we do, please get in touch. I would love to know.
Yeah.
Hello@thesqueeze.com.au. We'd love to hear from you. The other big event on Sunday is the first of two new Bluey episodes come out, Claire. You can catch that on ABC. This will be a big deal.
Kate, I'm a casual Bluey fan. I don't have kids.
Yeah, that's why I'm proud of you for even being a casual Bluey fan.
Oh, it's so good. But you are right in the zone. So I'm handing over to you.
I'm right in the zone. I'm very much looking
forward to a new episode
coming out, because Bluey's very big in my household, of a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old. I've been watching the same episodes for a while. They're very excited about a new episode. They're normally around 7 minutes long, and that's what the one coming out tomorrow is. Next week, though, we get a 28-minute long episode. It's basically a movie.
I love how things work in relativities. So 28 minutes is a movie.
It's a movie. And I mean, especially we're talking about attention spans of young kids. Yeah, like, yeah, that is a movie.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I guess for anyone listening and not sure why Bluey is such a big deal, it last year in the US was the second most streamed show of all shows.
It's amazing.
It's amazing. Just after Suits. Suits was number one. It's a joint venture between the ABC and the BBC. And the reason we're going on and on about Bluey is because it will be the subject of News Club next week. There is so much to talk about when it comes to Bluey and the phenomenon that it now is. So we've picked it as our News Club topic. Moving on, though, next Tuesday is the end of Ramadan. On Thursday, it's the South Korean legislative election. Legislative. Oh, my God. It's the hardest word to say in all of podcasting. Legislative.
It's legislative.
Oh, it's so difficult.
You got to lean into the slush.
And I've run out of time to tell you why that's important, but it might be in the news. Next Friday, it's Coachella.
Yep, no doubt. Lana Del Rey, Tyler, the Creator, Doja Cat, headliners. You can expect lots of photos, famous people in their very short shorts.
Very short shorts. Coachella, for anyone who doesn't know, is huge. It's two weekends, 250,000 people attend. The interesting point in reading about this a little bit is that it's actually, though, the slowest ticket sales for Coachella in a decade.
Yeah, there's clearly something happening around that sort of thing at the moment. Mm. Of course, last week, Byron Bay, that big music festival there, Splendor in the Grass, it announced that it's cancelling this year. It was Australia's largest and oldest music festival. So, yeah, lots of questions about what that actually means if people aren't rushing to go to the festivals like they used to.
The viability of them and whether it's that the talent's not there, whether there's a splintering of interest in music, which I think we've actually talked about before on the podcast, this idea that there's so much more music available at your fingertips. So there's not big, big artists in the way that there used to be.
Yeah, or maybe you're just like sitting in your tracky pants like at home listening to what you like to listen to.
Maybe you don't like going out. There's plenty of what ifs around that one, but certainly the cancellation of events like this is something that is quite prominent at the moment. Finally, just a sort of a note to jot down. If you're interested in politics and news, the Cook by-election is next Saturday. We'll probably talk about it in next week's weekly wrap.
I will be jotting that down because I think it will be in the news quite a bit this week.
Yeah.
Of course, lots of seats. We're heading towards the final sort of 12 months of our federal electoral cycle. So pre-selections are something that's getting talked about quite a bit, but this, of course, is replacing Scott Morrison in the parliament.
There you go. Before we get into what might be in the news next week, a message from our podcast advertiser, BHP. This week, they're keen to share with Squizzers how the resources they mine are key to the energy transition to renewable energy.
Yeah, we often hear about the push towards renewable energy, but what doesn't get as much attention is the role resources play in making that transition possible. Take steel, for instance. It's a key material used in the construction of renewable energy infrastructure, as well as in bridges, transportation, hospitals, and schools. And a big part of it comes from iron ore.
BHP says the importance of responsibly produced Australian iron ore is clear.
And by that, they mean reducing the greenhouse gas emissions associated with iron ore production. It's why BHP has committed to a solar and battery agreement to help power their port facilities at Port Hedland.
It's happening now at BHP. And if you want to learn more, visit bhp.com/critical. You'll find that link in your episode notes. Moving on to our recommendations, Claire, you're recommending a podcast about James Cook.
I know. And look, if you listen to this podcast, it's from The Breast is History, of course, Tom Holland and Dominic Sandbrook. It's the biggest
podcast.
History podcast in the world. Mm. They're delightful.
Yeah.
So everything they do, I think, is really interesting. I listened to quite a few of their podcasts over the Easter break because it was nice to pop on while going for a walk because they're really good companions
they
for that
are.
Sort of thing.
Yeah. Your friends in history.
Friends in history, exactly. These episodes on Captain Cook, they do start off acknowledging, I thought he was cancelled. Are we allowed to talk about him?
And then saying that they're quite big fans of what he was able to achieve. And it is a real gallop through his life
yeah.
that I didn't know a lot about.
And my recollection is, I think, from childhood pretty much similar to theirs. He was just this guy that just did stuff. Of course, they talked in
Explored.
Those days about discovering Australia and discovering, of course, he didn't discover those
yeah.
things of people here forever. But it means that there's a way to actually unpack him and recognise his achievement, which was significant.
Yeah, it's a really worth a listen. You got me onto that and I gave it a listen. I am recommending Oppenheimer just for purely for the benefit of anyone who's thinking, I should really watch that. I should put that on for 3 hours and watch it. Fantastic, fantastic movie and does not feel like 3 hours.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. I went and saw it at the movies. I kind of feel like there's this assumption that we all went to the movies and saw Oppenheimer and Barbie
yeah.
last year.
You may not have.
Plenty of people didn't.
You didn't. And I think it is daunting to go, okay, can I commit yeah. to 3 hours? It's really worth it.
Yeah. Have a look at it. So, Kate, Squiz Press this week, you've written an op-ed in Mumbrella, which, of course, is it's a publisher of marketing and media-focused news. Your op-ed title?
Well, newsletter, I think they wrote it.
Was,
I think they might have written it.
Well,
I'm not sure.
Yeah, that always happens. The subby gets the, yeah. gets gets the headline. Newsletter audiences should not be an afterthought for advertisers.
Yeah, I did. We often talk about how The Squiz started as a newsletter. We have such an engaged newsletter audience. But one thing I found, obviously, in my role as commercial director is that advertisers love podcasts, and we love that advertisers love podcasts, but we wish they loved newsletters a little bit more. So that op-ed sort of just explains why I think maybe newsletters are about to have their moment.
It's one of those dirty secrets, I think, about us where we really think podcasts are great, but we love newsletters.
We really love newsletters. It is a little bit of a funny thing where we produce podcasts, but we also produce newsletters and really love reading. So if you're interested in having a read of what I wrote, a link is in your episode notes, also on our LinkedIn, which you can always follow us there just to find out all of sort of the Squiz Press news and news about our business as well. Thanks for listening to this episode of Weekly Wrap. As I said, we'll be back with News Club on Tuesday, all about local content, Aussie content, and why Bluey really is such a big deal.
Exactly right. Look forward to it.
Kate Watson, co-host of News Club and The Weekly Wrap, jumping in here to say thank you for listening to our podcasts first and foremost. And if you like them, we'd really appreciate it if you could share them. Tell your mates about us, tell your family, tell your barista, tell your hairdresser, whoever you think might be interested in the news that we cover. You telling people about us is still the number one way we grow. Thanks in advance.